This is Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre.
Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Friday, January 15th, a glorious weekend of football ahead of us. A great interview later in the podcast. Mike Sando from The Athletic. He is the man who has implemented the tiers star quarterback system. It is caught on basically like bell bottoms did back in the day, like cargo pants. I know nobody still wears cargo pants other than me. But tiers is a thing. And Mike Sando is credited with that. He will join the podcast in a little bit. But first, we got to get to some big news. No, it is not the endless supply of fat James Harden memes that are circulating. I posted one that I just could not stop laughing at on my Instagram stories. Kevin Durant is putting up, you know, help me find Kyrie Irving signs around the Brooklyn neighborhood. The lost, have you seen this person? And rolls up, and James Harden, who is like, you know, 275 pounds, rolls up and is like, yo, what up? It just is hilarious. I don't know if Rob G's laughing at those as much as I am. I find them funny. But that's not the big sports news of the day. The big news Thursday was the New York Jets got a new head coach, Robert Saleh of the 49ers, the defensive coordinator. He's now with the Jets. We will get to Urban Meyer shortly, but the newer news was late Thursday night. Robert Saleh. Remember, he was basically ticketed to go to the Detroit Lions. I think it was old buddy of mine, Pete Schrager. We're going to have to get him on the podcast. He was talking up Saleh to the Detroit Lions in like December. And the way he was mentioning it and other reporters backed it up, it felt like a done deal. So Saleh went and interviewed in Detroit. Then he went to New York. Then he was like right after New York, he went down to Philly. And within a couple hours, boom, the Jets had him. And I'm like, huh, maybe the Jets' job is more attractive than the Eagles. I thought the Lions' job was very attractive. Matt Patricia out. Matt Stafford still there at quarterback. I thought that was a good gig. But again, you can never discount stuff. Who was it that dropped by the podcast, Rob G, who mentioned ownership was imperative? I think it was Eric Mangini. And, you know, Philly ownership looks awful. Giving Doug Peterson, hey, we're good. Things are good. You're on track to return. And then week 17 happens. You tank to help the team. And then they fire you. Like, that's a bad look for the owner, the GM. Michael Lombardi, who I've tried to get on the podcast. We were friendly. And he's just, like, giving me the stiff arm repeatedly. I know Mike Lombardi's big time and everything. But we had some fun times on TV. And he's come on my radio show before. But he savaged, I'm talking just picked apart the Eagles in a piece, an absolute evisceration of the GM and ownership. And I guess Robert Saleh, the handsome, tough leader of men from the 49ers, he will come to New York. And word is he's going to bring Mike LaFleur, the passing game coordinator and younger brother of Matt LaFleur, the Packers coach. They're both going to come as, I guess, a package deal to the Jets. And I do like that. Because you guys know how the NFL works right now. It's an offensive league. Most of the young best coaches are offensive guys. And if you get a hot offensive coordinator and he's tearing it up 1 year, 2 years, he's going to get a head coaching job. So that's the only difficult part of getting Robert Saleh is that his OC, if he does his job and is kicking butt, he's going to be gone in 2 years to get a head coaching job. So that's why I wanted an offensive guy. I can't complain. 49ers defense, despite all the injuries, was great. We talked about it. I forget who it was earlier this week. But a bet on team next year is going to be the Niners. They ended up, I think there was one team that didn't make the playoffs in the top 12 of the Football Outsiders, and it was the 49ers. Their numbers were great despite losing Nick Bosa and basically everyone else of consequence. So a big hire for the Jets. Listen, obviously I'm a Jets fan. Rob G was talking to me about bringing on another big Jets fan as a guest coming up. And it might happen. But yes, Urban Meyer to the Jacksonville Jaguars is bigger news. And I'm going to say this right now. Steve Spurrier was a great college football coach. And he didn't really make any waves in the NFL. Nick Saban, probably the greatest college football coach of all time. No such luck in the NFL. If Urban Meyer is able to win in Jacksonville, and, you know, he's going to have Trevor Lawrence, so he's got a massive head start. He's going to go into that upper crust of winning a title in college and winning in the NFL. And when we get into these fun discussions, who's better, LeBron or Jordan? Who's the best quarterback of all time? Who's the best coach of all time? I'm telling you, if Urban wins an NFL Super Bowl with Trevor Lawrence, Urban's going to be in that discussion. I know that Belichick has the big, 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 huge lead. No doubt. Probably uncatchable. But when you look at winning in college and winning in the NFL, only one coach has done that. Pete Carroll. I mean, it's an underrated aspect of Carroll's legacy, right? Wins a title at USC, goes to the NFL, wins in Seattle with Russell Wilson, who was a third-round pick. Like, listen, Pete Carroll's definitely got to be on the short list of greatest football coaches of all time. People aren't going to want to give him the props. He should have two Super Bowls, right? If not for that awful pass call inside the five-yard line at the end of the game. But we won't revisit that. I think Urban's going to have a real opportunity to have some good fortunes early. First of all, the division, yes, it had two playoff teams this past year, but neither is a lock to return. Colts quarterback uncertainty. Okay, Derrick Henry, and I'm going to mention this again, 370 is one of the key numbers this offseason. Derrick Henry had 370 carries. That is the line where the stat guys have looked at, and if a running back has over 370 carries, I think like 95% of the time he is awful the next year or gets injured. That's what Derrick Henry had this past season. And if you remember, he had 370 in the regular season finale, and what happened in the playoff game? Guy was running like he had a piano on his back. I think he had 40 yards rushing. And I'm just telling you, the numbers guys are going to be terrified of Derrick Henry. By the way, the Titans defense stinks. That's not a playoff team next year. And then the other team in the division is the Texans, who have a star quarterback and nothing else. There's going to be a chance for Urban Meyer to win pretty damn quickly in Jacksonville. I'm talking, he could get to the playoffs in 2 years. Remember, Andrew Luck got to the playoffs his first 3 years as a Colts player. There are quarterbacks that can elevate the play of everyone around them. And I believe Trevor Lawrence is one of those guys. They already have a couple really nice pieces in place. Laviska Shenault had a very good rookie year. The kid Robinson, undrafted rookie, went over 1,000 yards, looks like a keeper. I'm not going to get too excited about Keelan Cole. He was a solid number three receiver. DJ Shark is a promising two. I don't know if he's a number one. But Jacksonville has the extra draft picks. You get Trevor Lawrence. You go out and get somebody in the second round at receiver. Maybe you get a tackle. And then I think every other pick has to be defense. You spend the salary cap money on defense. And the Jacksonville Jaguars, I'll put it down right now. You guys can tag Old Takes Exposed on this one. Jacksonville in 2 years will be in the NFL playoffs. That's where Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence are headed. I'm extremely bullish on them. Now, somebody who is not nearly as bullish, that's Rob G.
Yeah, that would be an understatement to say that I'm not bullish on the Urban Meyer hire. And it's not that I don't think he's a good coach. I think he is a fantastic coach for the college game. I do not trust him in any way, shape, or form in the NFL. What made him successful at Florida and Ohio State specifically was his ability to recruit. I don't know if you know this, but during his last 12 recruiting cycles, he had 35 five-star players, which means 7% of every single five-star recruit went to Urban Meyer. Now, that might have seemed like a lot, but in the grand schemes of football recruiting, that's a huge number. And you know, the spread offense he ran at Utah is no longer innovative. So I don't know. You can take that out of there. And so if you're just going to say, well, what makes Urban Meyer a great coach? He's a fantastic recruiter, which was not going to matter in the NFL because there's a salary cap and he doesn't get to just pick the best players. And he's a very strong attention to detail, micromanaging kind of guy, which is awesome in college, what made him very successful, and it's also what led to him retiring three separate times because he got so stressed out and almost gave himself a heart attack. The Jacksonville Jaguars have lost almost as many games, actually more games in that span than Ohio State and Florida did combined. So I'm not high on the Urban Meyer hire. I think that he's fantastic for college and the NFL. Everything that makes him great is not going to translate. As crazy as it sounds, and again, you put on Old Takes Exposed as well. I don't think anyone cares what I think on Old Takes Exposed, but they would have been better off hiring Jim Harbaugh than they would have been with Urban Meyer. That's what I would say.
So I guess my counter to that would be the spotlight was on him at Florida, and that they were out to get him once some of this news of players getting arrested, once that started to snowball, they went after Urban Meyer. Remember, he kept the media at bay. He had kind of a prickly relationship with the media in the SEC, and then they went after him when Aaron Hernandez and a bunch of other players got arrested and in trouble. Urban did work at Fox for, I guess, the last year. I will be completely honest, did not speak to him once. I want to say he's a leader of men, but I'm sure a lot of people out there would say, what do you mean? Look at all these kids getting in trouble.
During 6 years at Florida, 31 players arrested at least, 10 accused of crimes ranging from misdemeanor battery to felony domestic assault.
So, I mean, listen, if you want to be an optimist, and my wife was honestly voted the class optimist in her high school, so some of that is rubbing off on me. You guys know I'm a pessimist, given listening to the podcast for 5 months and being a Jets fan. I think part of me, and again, I have not spoken to Urban Meyer about this, he wants to clean up that image because some of it carried over to Ohio State. There was that assistant coach, and he turned it, that assistant coach really screwed up badly. He's an idiot. And I think Urban wants to, he doesn't want his coaching career to end on that note. And now you get to go to the NFL and have the best quarterback prospect in over a decade. I mean, that's going to make life kind of easy. You can worry about everything else when you know you don't have to worry about your quarterback. Your quarterback's not going to keep you up at night. There's stories of college football coaches, and they can't sleep at night because they don't know if their star players are going to be getting in trouble in and around campus. Okay? I don't know that that's going to be an issue for Urban Meyer in Jacksonville. And let's remind everybody, Rob, Jacksonville has been joked about as like the London franchise. There's not a major media presence around Jacksonville. You know, this isn't the New York Jets. This isn't a major market team. Jacksonville has flown under the radar forever. I think Urban will find success there. Let's see who his offensive coordinator is. There was some speculation about a name. I'm not going to put it out there because it wasn't an impressive name. We don't know who he's going to get on defense. But that division, I mean, Rob, you would agree. In the last decade, it has been, since Peyton Manning left, probably one of the weakest in the NFL. Jacksonville did get to an AFC title game. Houston has had some playoff appearances. Tennessee got to an AFC title game, but none of these teams were great. And the other thing is uncertainty at quarterback for the Colts going forward. I mean, Ryan Tannehill, we'll see. Like, he's been really good for a year and a half. Okay, can he continue that? And I love Deshaun Watson, but Texans have a bottom five roster in the league. So Rob G and I split on this one, on Urban Meyer's success. Rob G, do you have any deep thoughts on Robert Saleh?
Yeah, I actually kind of agree with you in the sense that I don't think that he is being set up the best way to succeed. Not because of the Jets franchise or anything like that, but because he's a defensive coach. Right. And Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, tweeted this out early Thursday before it was even, you know, known that Saleh was a front runner or was going to get the job. Mike Zimmer has already had 5 different offensive coordinators in Minnesota, and their offense has never been, you know, great. Mike Vrabel, because we assume that his offensive coordinator is going to leave this offseason, is about to have his second or lose his second in only 3 years. So the problem in the NFL, you brought it up, is that everybody wants the next hot shot offensive guy. So either whoever the floor guy that he's that Saleh's hiring, I forget his first name, he's either going to flame out and Robert Saleh is going to get fired because the team's going to suck, or he's going to do fantastically, and in 2 years, he's going to need another offensive coordinator. And that much changeover is never good for anybody. Like, you know, especially if you have a young quarterback. The thing that has made a lot of guys set up to succeed and a lot of guys set up to fail, Alex Smith being, I think, one of the biggest examples, is when you have that much changeover at the offensive coordinator with a young quarterback, he's never going to become anything special. At best, you might get a Kirk Cousins type. And that's the drawback to hiring a defensive coach. And so that's my only concern about it, is that he's kind of in, stuck between a rock and hard place with that offensive coordinator. Either he's going to do bad and he's going to get fired, or he's going to do great and he's going to be stuck in this, you know, revolving door of OCs. Yeah. I don't like it.
And I guess final note before we get to Mike Sando, and of course the best bet playoff divisional picks will be at the end of the podcast. You know, Rob G, we've been talking about Sam Darnold landing spots, and Kyle Shanahan's offense has made a lot of sense. The Jets just hired to be their OC Kyle Shanahan's passing game coordinator. You know, is he going to look around and say, why do I want a rookie? We got Sam Darnold. Let's coach him up. And that'll be Sam Darnold's third different offense, you know? And let's say you do that. I'm not a fan of that because you got to pay Darnold. In 2 years, if LaFleur is killing it, he's going to get a head coaching job. And then you got to bring in a new guy to be the offensive coordinator. Like, I have some concerns. But again, I'm a Jets fan, so obviously I'm concerned about stuff. All right, so that is the big sports news from Thursday night. Let's get now to Mike Sando of The Athletic.
You know a guy. Jason likes to think he knows everything when it comes to sports.
I know what sports fans want.
But for everything he doesn't, he knows a guy who does.
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy who knows another guy.
All right, let's welcome into Straight Fire a guy who, listen, I'm not hyping him up too much, but he basically has revolutionized the way we grade quarterbacks. His tiers system has been copied in the NBA, college football, NHL, like everywhere. Mike Sando from The Athletic. Mike, how are you, man?
I am doing well. Thank you for that flattering introduction.
Yeah, I don't want to oversell you, but I mean, I got to say, like, you know, when you read around, this tiers thing has really caught on. I'll just start there. What gave you the idea to rank it in tiers?
Well, I think my mind has kind of worked that way in trying to make sense of usually a lot of information, right? Where we got a lot of teams or we have a lot of players and we're trying to make sense of them all. And so instead of ranking 1 to 32, I mean, that's sort of hard to do. You kind of put people in categories. And me talking to people in the league, really trying to learn what differentiates the quarterbacks, you know? And I think the tier system really works because it's basically a degree of how much help you need from what's around you, okay? That's really what it is. So if you're in tier one, you obviously need some good teammates, but you need less help, right? And if you go, the lower you get down in the tiers, it just makes sense that in the third tier, you could win with, let's just say, Andy Dalton when he was playing. You can win with Andy Dalton. They did. But they had a really good offensive line. They had really good weaponry. They had a top half of the league defense. And as those things stripped away, it was easier to see the difference between him and the top quarterbacks. When all those things were there, his numbers looked like the top quarterbacks. But I think, you know, people in the league knew what he was and that he needed that help. And so I think the tiers help us conceptualize that. And so it wasn't like I just one day had the tiers. If you go back and read my initial ones when I was at ESPN, we sort of developed it. The first quarterback tiers 2014 wasn't as rigidly defined. We didn't have as clear definitions for what each tier was. And that's the part that sort of developed over time and gotten to be pretty specific.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you look at this weekend's NFL games and you put the quarterbacks into tiers, it gets real interesting. We'll get to those games in a minute, but as we record this Thursday, the big news is that Urban Meyer has agreed to go to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They have the number one pick. It will probably be Trevor Lawrence. I can't imagine a scenario, you know, where it's not. But I did notice on your quarterback tiers, it's tough for rookies to crack that list. I mean, I know it's early. I don't expect that you've done massive amounts of homework on Trevor Lawrence, but this is a guy who we've known about for several years. It, just off the top of your head, what with Urban Meyer as his coach, given what Urban Meyer's done to Tim Tebow at Florida, Alex Smith before that, any idea where Trevor Lawrence could debut when you put out the tiers list this summer?
Yes. So in the last few years, I stopped putting rookies in the poll like before they've played. So I waited till their first year because what happens, like in the tiers, I'm talking to 50 people, right? Well, shoot, 25 of them didn't look at the rookies hard this year. You know what I mean? They need the year to see them. So I took that out. But I think we've seen, like, I think Kyler Murray, maybe Baker Mayfield after his rookie year, they were coming in at like the top of the third tier, even threatening the bottom of the second tier early. So I would think, given the excitement for Lawrence, which seems to be on par almost Andrew Luckish. I mean, it seems different. It's different than like when Goff and Wentz came out, people were like, hey, you need a quarterback, but you'd have a lot of people say, really, just from the total package standpoint, we should probably be taking these guys at the top of the second round. You know what I mean? Right. That's what people felt. People aren't saying that about Lawrence. They're saying, hey, you hear generational or these types of things. And that may be overselling it, but I think you'd want him to be, threatening that second tier early. Right away.
All right. One more before we get to the playoff games. Since we're talking third tier, I don't even know if he cracks a third. As a Jets fan, I have to ask about Sam Darnold. It's been a little unfair to him given that he's had a couple coaches already, and it's not like he's got skill position players around him that are, you would even say, average around the league. How tough of a grade is Sam Darnold at this juncture in his career?
Yeah, I think it's a little tough, but for those reasons you talked about. You know, I think there was actually probably too much focus on Adam Gase, the coaching. They didn't have any players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where you start. I did a thing before this season, looking at the support that each quarterback has had over the last 4 years. It was 2016 to 19. There was one team in the league that had zero starts on offense, take away the quarterback position, by someone who made the Pro Bowl. There was one team. It was the Jets. The Steelers and the Cowboys, 200 and some starts on offense over a four-year period by guys who were good enough to at least be in that conversation to be named to a Pro Bowl, like named to it, not on a replacement, but named to it. That's where you start. So I think he always is going to have a little bit of the issue of he seems more comfortable when he gets off schedule. And so, like, he's an instinctive player, but he's a little bit of a risk taker. It probably takes some really elite coaching to get that out of you. We've seen that maybe with Buffalo, Josh Allen, right? We've seen improvement there. Can you bank on that? Can you pass on somebody who's 25% better in the draft to hold out hope for that? I mean, that's a tough internal discussion that they have to have. I don't know how you could put him above low tier three, which is where he was at, which is kind of like, hey, you can be a starter in a league, but you need a lot of help around you. I think that's where you would start with this, that he's a third tier quarterback with maybe a ceiling of a two.
All right, let's get to this weekend's games. Mike, you wrote about Aaron Rodgers this week and I was reading it. Crazy. This is the kind of stat that you'll unearth that I don't see anywhere else. Last year, the Packers dropped 69 passes and 15 touchdowns, or I guess technically the word is missed. Right.
Missed opportunities. It's not all a blatant drop. You know, hands goes through and hits you in the face mask. That's not what we're talking. We're talking about you're running down the sideline and the ball's there to get. But during your route, we could see that you slowed up during the route because you didn't think it was coming to you. And this is me watching it sometimes with coaches. I'll watch the video with coaches sometimes. And then he doesn't quite get there to it. And you're going, hey, that's a catch a pro receiver makes. Not every time.
Right.
But off the charts, yes, it was off the charts last year. And what got me going on that was in my quarterback tiers poll, all the guys are saying Rodgers is tier one. But as we look at the stats, they're not tier one stats anymore.
Right.
There's a drop. So what we did is we decided let's watch all of his incomplete passes. His incomplete passes last year are better than other guys' completed passes.
Right.
Unbelievable. Chicago early in the year, he's running from midfield, sprinting to his right, way out, like outside the numbers almost, spins it across his body to Jimmy Graham at the 5-yard line on the other hash, goes, hits him in the shoulder pad.
Yeah.
You know, that type of stuff is what Rodgers did, you know, and this year, there's two things going on. Number one, so much is just in the structure of the offense. He's not having to run around and do that. If you notice that, he's not making as many spectacular plays. He's not making as many spectacular throws running all over the place because the offense is working. And then two, Adams is playing amazing. Even he's even better. And then the last 10, 12 games, they've had way fewer of those just obvious open would have gained 30 yarders. So it's been good to see for them.
So, okay, reading your piece, and I got to ask, Mike, like, if Aaron Rodgers was so great last year, the coaches could see it, the receivers and running backs and tight ends dropped a lot or missed a lot, why would they draft a quarterback in the first round? The disconnect there is even more startling reading your piece.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they may have thought that they were confident in developing who they had at receiver, and that they didn't see somebody in that spot who would be worthy of the pick at receiver. If you go back and look at who is available at the receiver position and what they've done this year, there's actually not a ton of – there's not a million guys who are who have 55 catches for 1,000 yards. There's not. So that can be part of it. I think also they are very confident in Matt LaFleur's system, that they probably think that Love could do fine in a few years and that they liked him and they were convicted on that. And so when you look at Brian Gutekunst, he comes from Ron Wolf and they've had a philosophy of doing that. I mean, I still think that they could fall short this year because of the receivers, because they didn't do more at that position. Because when their offense is working and they're balanced, they're impossible to defend and guys are open and Rodgers just finds them. When they play a team like when they played Tampa and there's a, or like the 49ers even last year when they could really pressure or they make you one dimensional, take away the run game, who's winning for them besides Devonta Adams? Devonta Adams will win. Will win. But maybe you play a team that doubles him or has Jalen Ramsey or whatever. Who else on their team can win outside the offense?
I think that's a great fair question. And Mike, let me follow up with that. Like, this is a Packers team that played the 31st strength of schedule in the league. You look up and down the road, like, what did they do against good teams? Like, they haven't played a lot of teams with winning records. They got smashed by Tampa. Like, I almost think the Packers are a little overrated here. I just can't get over the Rams' injuries. Mike,
the Rams, I don't know if they can score enough, you know, to take them out. You know, what do you think? Go ahead, finish your thought. I just,
Aaron Donald's not practicing this week, but McVay says, oh, yeah, he's going to play. Cooper Kupp, banged up knee. You know, I don't trust Jared Goff. By the way, where is he on your quarterback tiers?
Yeah, you know, Jared Goff sort of has settled into that third tier. You know, it's potentially unfair, but I think that perception of, hey, he was absolute garbage, and then Sean McVay showed up and is telling him what the play is on the play until 15 seconds on the play clock, and then when the run game is or isn't there, it really affects how he looks, right? We don't see this. We see him make some great throws. We don't see him consistently elevate them, right? We see him look good when it's looking good, but not necessarily be able to pull them out of it when it's not. And so that's classic tier three, but he probably throws the ball better than that at his best. He does make some really good throws.
All right, let's go to what I think is probably the biggest gap in quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes, best quarterback in the league. I know Rodgers will probably win the MVP going up against Baker Mayfield. Big spread on this one of 10. But, Mike, I'll start here. We have seen teams have sit their starters in Week 17, have a bye, and then come out flat. Okay, we've seen that, and we've seen Kansas City for 2 months kind of sleepwalk through games, coming off the Super Bowl. Can Baker Mayfield make this game interesting?
Well, I don't want to see him in a pure drop-back situation where they're down by 20 points, but I don't want to see a lot of guys like that. You know what I mean? I also, if I could pick one team to be coming off of a bye, it's an Andy Reid team, right? That was always a story for years, like, hey, Andy Reid's record after the bye. So I think in this season, when – I think this season's been a real grind for more than we can see because of the – I've talked to people on teams, not necessarily players, but who were like, hey, if we don't make the playoffs, or when our season's done, there's a bigger relief than normal because it's daily testing. You didn't even get a bye week. You keep going to the facility, and you're not the parts of the game that are fun – having beers at a film session with the guy at the left tackle's house on Thursday, or hanging out in the locker room and playing cards, or just screwing around and throwing wads of tape at each other. You know what I mean? And setting a prank with somebody, having the rookies show up at the supermarket for the fake promotion, you know, that while it's all on camera. You know, those are the things that guys miss when it's over. Those aren't happening this year. And I think there's a grind to the season that maybe getting a little bit of a break before the playoffs isn't such a bad thing. I do have a note for you, though. I was just looking at this. This is counterintuitive. Most games this season with 40 or more points scored, okay? Tennessee, 5. Cleveland, 4. Tampa, 4. Green Bay, 4. Buffalo, 3. Kansas City's got 1.
Huh.
So we really think of this as being a game where, hey, look, they're not going to be able to keep up with Mahomes. You can't get into a shootout. If there's too many points scored, that really favors Kansas City. But Cleveland's put up 40 plus on Baltimore. You know, they've put up points on
Tennessee.
Pittsburgh. Tennessee. Yeah. You know what I mean?
On Tennessee. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that interests me a little bit. I was just looking now. So they're 4. So the Browns are 4-3 this year against top 10 defenses. That's top 10 EPA expected points added. They averaged, they only averaged 24 points a game on those teams. They're still pretty good against really good defenses. And Kansas City's not one of those defenses. So
I mean, there's no way to quantify it. And you're a big numbers guy, clearly, Mike. But this idea of the Super Bowl hangover, I know it's a silly narrative, but just the desire, the quest to win. When you just watch them, I don't want to say it looks like they're going through the motions, but it feels like a team that just feels like, all right, we got to turn it on. Let's go.
I agree with you.
You know, that's an eye test thing, right?
It is. I believe that's just human nature. When you win the lottery, it's hard to go to work at 6 a.m. every day. You know what I mean? When you're worried about not getting your contract renewed or not having a job or losing it to the guy in the office who's kind of the up-and-comer, you get there at 5:30 every day.
Yeah.
And I think it's just hard to fake hunger, right? You're either hungry or you're not. And once you've eaten, you're not as hungry. Once you've gotten paid, you know, it takes a special person to keep driving. And I think there's a lot of special people in Kansas City. Andy Reid grinds. He's in that office all the time. I think these guys work at it, but it's hard to fake hunger. And I think they've actually done a good job winning some of these games. They've been closer.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm anxious to see. Is that indicative of something in a negative way? Or now when your backs are really against the wall, you turn it up. That said, they were down 24-0 to Houston in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
Last year was the year they were down double digits 6 times and went 5-1. I don't think they've had that as much this year. Have they? I don't think they've been down as much. They just haven't been pulling away by 3 scores, it feels like.
And this is tough to quantify, but you look at Tom Brady, and for whatever reason, it feels like he's the guy, 6 rings, but he's still hungry.
Oh, man,
He already won the breakup with Belichick. You know, he made the playoffs, won a game. But I don't know, Mike. I kind of feel strongly about New Orleans in this spot.
Yes. I was actually thinking about this last night because I feel tempted to pick Tampa Bay. I've just been tempted, like I've wanted to. But I think we're, if we do that, we're sort of sleeping on the Saints defense and their front and their ability and their secondary, really, for that matter. I mean, I think they've been a good defense. And what I'm looking for in this game is evidence that Bruce Arians can move the needle coaching-wise. Okay, I feel like they've done an okay job of getting Brady going. And he obviously had 40 touchdowns, but it was a little bit of a struggle. I felt like they should have in the offseason signed more of a receiving back and given him a little bit more of what helped him have quick answers to pressure and that type of stuff because he can't move. They've gained momentum here, but they're 0-2 against the Saints and they got smoked the last time.
Yeah.
And where, you know, I think Sean Payton's done a great job of, hey, winning with Taysom Hill, winning with a diminished Breeze, finding different ways to do it. Can Arians have a move on the chessboard to give his team an edge against a really well-oiled machine in New Orleans that's been doing it for a long time? It's kind of what I want to see, right? Not just that Brady had a great game or whatever.
You could probably argue that and this is not a slight to Bruce Arians. He's got Super Bowl rings, you know, as an assistant. He's the weakest head coach left of the eight teams. Is that mean? I mean, you're laughing.
Well, here's why I'm laughing, because before 20 minutes before we started, I texted your producer and I was like, hey, just hit me some topics. He's like, one of them was like best and worst coaches left. I'm like, great. This is going to be a tweet. Sando, worst coach remaining is. But what I was really struck by in looking at it is like, there's not crap coaches left.
Yeah,
you know,
no, yeah.
You know what definitely. I mean? You look at this, it's like, you'd say, okay, well, Stefanski's only done it for 1 year, but he's the coach of the year, maybe.
Right. And he was amazing with Minnesota last year.
Yeah, yeah. But so, you know, Andy Reid is probably the quote unquote best coach left, right? I mean, he's one, you know, but John Harbaugh has done it for a long time.
Yeah.
Sean Payton might be the best. We can make
Sean Payton. Look, yeah, yeah.
We have a lineup of guys who are between 7 feet tall and 7'1", and we're ranking them by height. You know what I mean?
Right,
the shortest guy here is 7 feet tall. I mean, these guys are really doing well. So would you say it's Bruce Arians?
Well, I guess when I'm thinking too much about last week's games, but some of the decisions made by Vrabel were atrocious. Mike Tomlin, just head-scratching stuff. I don't think much of Nagy, but I'm not going to blast him. I just wonder what Arians will do in a big game against an elite defense because, I mean, Mike, I looked at the teams that finished 500 or better. So Tampa Bay lost to the Saints in the opener. We pass on that, whatever. They lost to the Saints again. They lost to the Rams in a game they were beaten from beginning to end. If you remember, I think it was Monday Night Football, maybe Sunday night. And then the Chiefs game. I don't know if I buy this team.
Yeah. So here's the filter that I would look at this through. Who of these coaches has shown an ability to elevate somebody to a level that they hadn't been before? So you go like, hey, McVay, I just got the games here. McVay did that with Goff, right? Goff did not look good, right? Even LaFleur, right? You can read Sando's piece and say his receivers were the issue, but look, they look better. Look at their record in 2 years with LaFleur compared to the last couple with McCarthy, right? You could say that LaFleur, Rodgers is playing as good as ever with LaFleur. That's defensive.
Indeed.
You would say with Harbaugh, he's done it with Flacco. He's done it with Lamar Jackson. I mean, Lamar Jackson, really, Bill Polian said he wouldn't be a quarterback because we laughed, but he said he thought that people would try to put him in a traditional offense. And if he was in a traditional offense, he wouldn't look good. He wouldn't look as good. Yeah. But what has Harbaugh done? He created the perfect environment for him to be amazing, be an MVP.
Yeah.
You would say with the Bills, they've developed Josh Allen. They've had a plan. You would say with the Browns, they've gotten to the playoffs for the first time, you know, in forever. You'd say with Kansas City, he made Alex Smith. They won with Alex Smith. You know what I mean? They've taken a guy who people didn't think was going to go in the top, who wasn't a top 10 quarterback. Mahomes was not in the top 10.
Yeah.
Right? He was 10th. Was he 10th?
Yeah,
he wasn't higher than that. And he's the MVP within 2 years. Sean Payton, we said he's done it with multiple guys. So, okay, Bruce Arians has done it with Carson Palmer. He's done it with a little bit with Luck. He's done it a little bit with Roethlisberger. He's done it. But those were all really good guys. You know, those were all guys who were number one picks or they've been to Pro Bowls with other people. Brady was obviously good.
Yeah,
You know what I mean? So that may be the thing that I'm saying I want to see.
I don't know that this is a great matchup for them, but at any rate, let's wrap up on the final game, Mike. Ravens and Bills. This is, I like this game. It was the first game I bet this week. It does feel like everybody's split on this. You know, some people still like the hot, hot Buffalo Bills who were on fire recently, although they didn't look great against the Colts. I just keep coming back to what beats the Bills or what can beat the Bills is everything the Colts did, run the football, tight ends in the middle of the field, get pressure with four, drop back in the secondary. Like, Ravens have everything. It feels like they have every piece to win this game.
Yeah, I was leaning that way. It was funny. I was leaning that way. I think I was listening to Richard Sherman on Chris Collinsworth's podcast about this, and he sort of convinced me that and I wrote about this last week. So, big win. Lamar Jackson wins in the playoffs. They allowed 13 points.
Yeah.
So, they scored 20. This amazing game by the Bills, they scored 20 points against Tennessee, which is a bottom five defense. So
that's fair, yeah.
So I think when I look at Buffalo, they've been one of the best teams against good defenses. Okay, they have put up. I've got it in front of me here. I mean, so against top 10 EPA defenses, they're 6-0, averaging 35 points a game. Okay.
Wow.
They beat Miami 31-28, 56-26. They beat the Rams 35-32. They beat the 49ers 34-24. Pittsburgh 26-15. Indy, even a good defense, 27-24, wasn't their best day. But that's a history of never not putting up points against good defenses.
Where's the Ravens on the EPA defense list?
Fourth.
Oh, boy.
So now the Ravens have other ways they can control you and beat you up. I like their chances. I mean, I the case you're making is logical. Like, that could totally happen. But Buffalo's just scored a lot of points. Now, a couple teams did hold them down. I think they've gotten held down a couple of times.
Yeah, Patriots held them to 24. I look back also at the running quarterbacks. Kyler Murray gave them fits in the desert. I think he had 64 yards.
11 carries, 62 yards, 2 touchdowns. Yep.
Yeah, and Cam Newton in that rain game where the Patriots really were driving in to score and then they fumbled inside the 15, but Cam had something like 59 yards and a couple touchdowns.
Yes.
I think Lamar can have some success on the ground against his run defense.
Yeah, I actually had that broken out too. So Cam had 9 for 54 and a touchdown in one meeting, 4, 24 and 1 in another. So that is a legitimate issue, you know, potential concern. I do think in the playoffs, you get teams' best game plans. You know, one of the concerns I had from Tennessee was they didn't have Dean Pease anymore. That was a little bit of a concern for me. So I look at McDermott. He's hired as a defensive coach. This is his moment to have a plan for a great player in Lamar Jackson, but somebody who can be solved. He has a flaw, right? They have a flaw offensively that when you make him play left-handed or whatever, it's hard for them. This is where Sean McDermott has to make that be an issue. So you look at them, what do they have on defense? They have 2 good safeties.
Yep.
And they have a number one corner. Those are the things they have. You don't have to have an amazing pass rush on Lamar. You have to have a plan with the rush lanes and all that. It's a concern. But this is where McDermott has to earn his money, with the safeties, with the number one corner, with enough on defense. They've been better defensively the second half. With enough on defense to have a plan to at least mitigate a somewhat one-dimensional player. By one-dimensional, it doesn't mean that Lamar Jackson can't throw the ball. It means that it's all predicated on the run.
Yeah.
When that run isn't there.
Yeah. Were you surprised, Mike, that the Colts had 8 plays of 20 or more yards? The Bills had 8 plays of 20 or more yards. I'm sorry, the Colts had 8 plays of 20 or more yards against the Bills. And they rushed for like a 175.
Yeah, they really came out right away and just ran it down their throats. So, there's 2 reasons I'm not betting a lot of money in the game. One, I would probably be fired for betting on the league if I was covering it. And 2, it's really hard to beat those guys.
Yeah,
anyone who thinks they can beat the spread over time, you might do it for a year, you might do it for 2 years. There's a reason people sell gambling advice instead of just betting themselves. It's because it's really hard to do. And then,
you don't have to pick against spread.
Is it 2.5?
It's 2.5. It was 3. It actually opened 3.5 and then came down to 3, and then 2.5. So there is some, considerable money coming in on the Ravens.
Yeah.
Road game.
I may just not overthink it and just lean towards Buffalo, but I'd be worried about it for the reasons you talked about. I do think that Baltimore's really good, and I think that they could beat him. And Josh Allen scares me sometimes too. As good as he is, that fumble late in the game.
Yeah.
He plays hero ball still sometimes, and it's wonderful when he finds the guy at the last second in the end zone for the flip pass, and he's wide open, the tight end. That was amazing. But on 1st and 10 from the plus 34, up by 3 points with 3:50 left in the game,
yeah,
you take a 17-yard sack and fumble for 6 more yards. You do that on Baltimore, you'll lose the game.
Yeah.
And Mark Peters is a pick sixer. I mean, you can talk yourself either way.
Yeah, I'll bury this at the end so the Bills Mafia guys don't come after me. But if Josh Allen opens in Tier 1 next year for you and Brian Daboll leaves, I wonder how much of a fall Allen will have next year, because we've seen Carson Wentz with Frank Reich, and I don't know how much Frank Reich was involved in play calling. There's some dispute over that. We've seen Wentz not really be the same guy since that MVP year when Reich was there. And I just wonder if Daboll departs, and he's expected to go, will we see Josh Allen maybe fall back a little bit?
Oh, you sure could. I would imagine he'll come in the second tier. I think that because like last year, Lamar was second tier, even though he's MVP. People were like, hey, I want to see him do it again. I think it was wonderful for him, but there's a reason they didn't advance in the playoffs. And they've got to do a better job developing their pass game before I put them all the way up in tier one with the guys who traditionally can throw you back into a game. You're behind. Yeah. That's what we're you strip everything away. The essence of the game for the quarterback at the end is we have to put it on your shoulders, and there's not a play action running game. There's not all that stuff because we have to win right now. You know, when we're down in the Super Bowl, but to the top defense like Kansas City was by two touchdowns, we can win the game. Our guy on 3rd and 15 might make the throw of the year. He's going to lead us down. And to do that, you know, people need to see more than one good year of it. So I think he'll be high tier two. And you're right. Then we'll see, like it was with Lamar this year. The first half of the year, it was like, hey, what's going on here, right? People get a plan for you, that type of stuff.
Yeah. So he's Mike Sando, The Athletic. When you watch quarterbacks this weekend, you'll think, oh, that's a tier one. Ah, that's a tier two. You know, Mike, congratulations on all your success. Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you. This was a fun conversation.
The only thing better than sitting on your couch watching the game is making money while you do it. Here's your best bet.
Great stuff from Mike Sando. Very sharp mind. You could tell this guy is really into the numbers. I like his stuff. I like the cut of his jib, as they say in the streets. All right, let's get to the best bet here. NFL divisional playoffs weekend. Let's update the best bet. Currently sitting at 66 wins. 63 losses, 5 ties, barely over 500. We went through a rut there. Week 16 and 17 were not kind to your boy. Did not go well. I'll blame New Year's and Christmas. Can I do that? Okay. 3 picks this weekend. The first game I bet right out of the gate, a significant play on Sunday night, was Ravens plus 3. I woke up Monday morning. It was Ravens plus 2.5. If you listen to the podcast daily, you know that this is the way I've been headed all week. I like the Ravens. Now, I'm only taking 3. I would rather take 3 in the juice than 2.5. A lot of stuff line up here for the Ravens, and we talked about it at length. I will say what concerns me, if you listen closely to Sando, that Buffalo Bills offense, it's going to be a problem for the Ravens, especially if the Ravens decide, hey, we excel at man-to-man defense in the secondary and blitzing. We have blitzed more than any other team in the league, and we trust our cornerbacks. Well, I hate to break it to you, Wink Martindale, but Josh Allen is amazing this year under pressure. You cannot blitz him because his receivers, Speedy John Brown, Steph Diggs, Cole Beasley, get opened at a ridiculous rate and often beat up on the cornerbacks. So then it becomes, well, who do you trust? Marcus Peters, Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith, or the Bills receivers and Josh Allen's accuracy? I would like to see Wink Martindale, the defensive coordinator of the Ravens, mix it up and play a little, hey, we're just going to rush 4, play man, and lock up everything. Go ahead, run the football on us. We don't trust Devin Singletary. I do think there is some hero ball that's, you know, you heard Sando talk about it with Josh Allen. And ultimately, give me Lamar Jackson on the road. By the way, Jim Harbaugh, fun stat. Jim Harbaugh has more road playoff wins than any coach in NFL history. He's a good coach. I know he ran into some hard luck the last 2 years with Lamar. I thought he had a great game plan last week. You know, Tennessee defense is pathetic, and, you know, Buffalo is significantly better, but I took the Ravens plus 3. Again, you're going to pay juice. It's going to be like, you know, if the juice is minus, plus 3 minus 123, it's like $1,000 and you win like 820 or something. So it's not great on the juice, but again, 3 is the most key number in the NFL, and you definitely want 3 instead of 2.5. My next bet, Looks like it still is at three. Give me the New Orleans Saints. I think the most public side come kickoff Sunday evening is going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because who doesn't want to bet? Tom Brady is an underdog. How tough is it to beat a team three times in a year? Like, all these narratives are at play. Saints did not look good last week. It's just not a good matchup for the Bucs. And there was an injury that I haven't seen many people talk about. Alex Kappa, one of their interior guards. They had great offensive line play this year, a lot of continuity in front of Brady. Alex Kappa, I saw a fractured ankle. He's out. His replacement, and they have two options. They could either put a tackle at guard or the backup guard, who's played basically one game all season, against that Saints front. And in the middle, they're pretty good. David Onyemata, I hope I'm saying that right, he's a beast. And Rankins is very good. I think they get pressure up the middle on Brady. And we know Lattimore versus Mike Evans, big edge to Lattimore, by the way, going off topic here. I don't know what I was doing, but I went to YouTube, and all of a sudden I saw that there was a video, Marshawn Lattimore, how I spent my first $1 million. And I show my kids, it's a crazy video. You got to look this up. I mean, he spent $60,000 on chains after he signed his rookie deal, like necklace chains. I mean, my kids were like, what is he doing that for? It's a crazy video. Anyway, Marshawn Lattimore has dominated Mike Evans head to head. Evans, not even 100%. I'm sorry. I got to take the Saints. I favor by three. Now, I do not like it at 3.5. I do not advocate that. I don't think we'll see a 2.5. I think the exposure to the books will be on the Saints. Will be because everybody's betting Tampa. I think they'll need the Saints. And I'm going to take, you know, New Orleans here, favored by three. And finally, this one is a little more difficult to stomach. But just so I can get a little action on all the games, I'm going to do a teaser. And a teaser hit last week. And let's go back to the well, a six-point teaser. I'm taking the Packers down from 6.5 to half a point. So the Packers just have to win the football game. And I'm actually not going to... and this sounds insanely stupid. I'm not going to tease the side on Browns Chiefs. I'm going to take 57 and take it down to 51. I think this is a dead nut over. It's been one way money on the over all week. It's gone. I think it was 55 up to 57. It's probably going to go higher. The Browns defense is atrocious. Ultimately, when the Chiefs wake up, you know, probably in the second quarter or the second half, they will ultimately take it to the Browns. I mean, I have a nibble on the Browns plus 10, but I'm not going to give that out here. just letting you guys know I did bet that small, you know, not a significant play. And I don't have a ton of confidence in it. It's just simply betting a number. You give me 10 points on the road against a team that hasn't won a game by 10 points in 3 months, hasn't covered the spread in, I think, 2 months. And they rested their starters in week 17 and then had a bye. They're going to be sleepy in this one. And the Browns will have an opportunity. So the final bet will be a teaser, Packers minus half and over 51. So there are your three best bets for divisional playoff weekend. Everybody enjoy it. We're back with you on Monday.